Now, I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here today on the big program. We're going to be talking with Mickey Boltz from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. After all, it is Manufacturing Monday. So we're going to be talking about manufacturing policy. We're going to talk about how do we turn the economy around? How do we get people back to work? How do we get people out to the polls and happy and ready to go and fight the good fight? I say with Democrats who... Oh, I don't know. Stand up for working people. Democrats who are on the side of working people. And today we're going to talk a little bit about some of that stuff going on. Yesterday's Crackpot Fest, which was, you know, the morning shows. Crackapalooza, if you will. We'll talk about some of the things Bill Clinton had to say, some of the things Colin Powell had to say. Oh, just so much to get to. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What's on your mind this day? So much to get to. But I want to start off by looking at this frame. And the frame is that Democrats are demoralized. And to a degree, I believe that's to be true. But the reality is you've got the mainstream media who is pushing this, hoping that Democrats will stay home. Because really, that's the only way Republicans are going to win. Here's what we've got to do. We've got to hold Democrats accountable, yes, but we've got to also support the ones that support us, which is why I look at this case here locally. State Representative Dwight Evans introduced a transportation bill, about $1.3 billion he wants for transportation. Personally, I think that's about two. I'd like to see that go up maybe two, three times. The governor introduced a bill, wanted $1 billion. Evans wanted $1.3 billion, which is good. I mean, this is a good start. We're having the conversation like grown-ups should. We're talking about who's going to pay for it, some profit taxes on oil companies, some increases in fees. Everybody's going to feel the pain a little bit, a whole bunch of little things like that. And then you get to the bottom, and there are three things about Dwight Evans' bill that kind of frustrates me. One is this promotion of mergers and more consolidation, bigger and bigger and bigger agencies. I think that's troublesome. The other part of that is this P3 stuff. Oh, we need to have public-private partnerships, which I'm totally against. It hasn't been shown to work, and I don't think it's ever going to work. If we're going to take taxpayer dollars and we're going to build a road or a bridge or a public transportation system, I think the public should benefit from it. I don't think that the benefits should go to a private for-profit company to hand out to the investor class of this country. I think that is a major mistake. But the one thing, and the first time I brought this bill up, Jake, it was last week. We talked about it for a couple of minutes. The last requirement in it is the one that grabbed me by the neck. And it says it requires unions to give a 72-hour notice before a work stoppage. And it just ends there. This actually has a lot of teeth if you read the language. For union leaders, $500 an hour in fines. For the worker, $50 an hour in fines. There's jail time. There's a whole bunch of this that really isn't answered, but it's there. And this is a Democrat doing this. And then we wonder why Democratic voters are angry. Then we wonder why Democratic voters say, you know, that's not what I stand for. Which is why I do believe unions are going to have a tough time getting their people out to vote if you keep seeing stuff like this. Look, as a working person, you have one thing, just one thing. You've got one arrow in your bag. That's it. And that's whether you're going to come to work or not. That's all you have. At the end of the day, the employer controls the conditions, the wages, the hours, if it's going to be safe or unsafe, what you're going to do, what you're going to wear, what time you take your lunch, what time you take your breaks, what time you go home, all of it, what shoes you wear, everything. The employer decides everything except whether you are going to work or not. That's it. That's all you have. There's nothing else. So this, well, I'll just go somewhere else. Well, yeah, you've got the choice whether you're going to come to work or not. And to see a piece of legislation like this, Jake, that comes out and puts really big, sharp teeth in a bill from a Democrat is concerning. Especially when you look at the other side of the coin, there is nothing. They're not even gumming management. It's not a matter of having teeth. They're not even gumming them. No jail time, no fines for lockouts. The thing at that Express Script place where they said, well, we're going to put a gun to your head. You take what we're giving you or we're going to move. Nothing there. No, that's fine. That's business doing what business does. So, you know, when you look at something like this, Jake, what's infuriating is that this is a Democrat doing this to us.
And he's from Philadelphia. Unions are strong down there. I'm sure he's had tremendous help over the years. And all too often, I mean, labor gets accused of just supporting Democrats. First of all, that's not true. But all too often, they want our support when they want our money, when they want our people, when they want to get elected. And sometimes they deserve to be shaken up a little bit, and they need to be held accountable. And it looks like labor needs to hold this man accountable.
At the end of the day, look, you know, I hear people say that all the time. Well, you know, organized labor's on the side of Democrats. Well, yeah. And there's a reason for that, because the Republicans hate organized labor for the most part. I've yet to find anyone in Congress right now. There's no one in the Republican Party right now going that I know of. If you know of somebody, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, tell me. I would love to find him because I'm dying to vote for a labor-friendly Republican. Because I want somebody who's going to say, you know what, I honestly believe that you have the right to collectively bargain and you should be able to share in the wealth that you create. The problem is the modern-day GOP, the greed-obsessed party, they don't care about working people. They care about profit. And that's it. And what frustrates me, again, you go back to this and you say, this is a Democrat putting this forth. Why? What's the purpose? And is it that he doesn't understand that that this is the only thing labor has? Or is it, you know, because I've, you know, when you first bring it up, well, there should be a 72-hour period. You know, let everybody know. It sounds reasonable. But look, strikes are not reasonable actions. Getting into these contract fights are not reasonable times. You don't see management being punished like this for locking people out and going past the contract date. You know, one of the things I said is when I first read this, I said, you know, if we're going to lock labor up, maybe we should lock management up in the same area and let them duke it out. And they don't get out of jail until they figure something out. To me, sounds like a way to go.
Is there any provision in there for mediation and arbitration, right?
No, there's nothing. There's none of that. All it is saying that labor has to give a 72-hour strike notice, and if they don't, they'll be fined and imprisoned, and their rights will be taken away from them. Look, again, as I've said, you have one thing and one thing only. That's whether you're going to work or not, and they're trying to take that away as well. I mean, stop and think about that for a second. They're taking that away from you. Whether you're union or non-union, it doesn't matter. It's your right to choose whether you're coming to work or you're not. It's a very, very simple concept. You know, management, they'd love to have that. Say, go ahead. Go on out on strike. Again, you know, it's one of those frustrating things. Anyway, this weekend, a lot of talking heads on the talking head programs. It seemed like Crackpaddlepalooza. The main topic I think everybody was talking about was our new sorceress, Christine O'Donnell, the new sorceress. I dabbled in witchcraft. Yeah, that's going to get you elected, honey.
Mm.
That's going to help. That and the other thousand crazy other things she had to say, my favorite being, they're working on mice with human brains. They're going to be little mice, little tiny mice with human functioning brains. Mm. And I kept trying to remember the cartoon character, but it just didn't come to me today.
All I can say is that advisor that she hired, I think, ought to be fired.
You know, the one
if she has one.
The one thing that she has not said, and this is what, you know, she's anti-sex. She's anti a whole bunch of things, but the one thing that I haven't heard her say anything about is if she's anti-drug, because I think this woman's high. I think she's been high for a very long time, and you know, maybe, you know, during those years when she was carousing and having sex with people she wasn't intimate, attached to, back before she found whatever it is she claims she found. Maybe, just maybe. She got hooked on the LSD a little bit, and she's still tripping.
I'd like to know her statement. I guess my guess would be she's tying that into a conversion to Christianity to try to point out how far she's come.
See, now this is where it went. I had a conversation with a friend of mine today. I said, "Well, who lives in Delaware?" And I said, "What do you think of this?" He goes, "Come on, you know, she went from witchcraft to Christianity. It's all voodoo." I was like, wow, is that the Delaware position? He's going, come on, this woman is just flapping in the breeze. And I said, you know what's really sad about this is? There's a good possibility she could become a United States Senator. I mean, that's the really sick part of this. I mean, it's funny, ha-ha, you know, she's dabbled in witchcraft, and she thinks there are mice with human brains, and you know, all the other craziness that she's into, but she could actually become a United States Senator. And then I sit and I think, I go, has the institution completely lost any reverence, any sense of statehood, any sense of stature when a woman who, well, I just dabbled in witchcraft. Oh, crazy, crazy, crazy. Let's take a quick break. We're back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Friday saw what could eventually become a stream of positive job growth news. General Motors said that a $483 million investment at a plant in Spring Hill, Tennessee, could see the return of 483 laid-off workers. GM will make the investment if it receives requested incentive packages from local and state governments. The U.S. Navy announced it is trying to bolster interest in a shipyard that is scheduled to be shuttered by Northrop Grumman in 2013. Northrop plans to consolidate shipbuilding in Mississippi. The Avondale shipyard has been in ship production for 75 years and employs 5,000 workers. The Navy's plan would advance a multi-billion-dollar contract that would see the construction of a new class of oilers starting in 2014. The plan would likely see scrutiny by the Treasury Department, as it could allow for a foreign company to purchase the property. And Boeing plants could also soon see a hiring spree, as the company announced plans on Thursday that the company would be increasing the current production rate of 737s of 31.5 planes per month to 35 planes per month in 2012 and 38 planes per month in 2013. Boeing did not know as of Friday how many new workers that would mean in the long run. In a resurgence of hope or promise change, of unity and pursuit of political and social policies that reclaim the American dream for all Americans, One Nation is on the march. Doug Cunningham files this report.
The October 2nd march in Washington, D.C. is expected to draw huge numbers of people calling for jobs, justice, and better education. Heather Booth is Executive Director of Americans for Financial Reform.
The broad theme is putting America back to work and pulling America back together. 2 years ago, so much of the country was filled with hope and a sense of possibility. And so people came out for the election, embracing people across other divides. In the last period of time, as often happens in terrible economic downturns, there's been professional hate mongers, often in the most prominent places in the media, often backed by millionaires and billionaires, to divide people and make people feel that they're not part of the true America.
Organized labor, civil rights, education, and environmental groups are all uniting for this One Nation Working Together march in Washington, October 2nd.
And what One Nation Working Together is trying to do is to say that all of us are part of the true America and to call us back to the principles on which the country was founded for life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness.
To join One Nation and help build the march, go to www.onenationworkingtogether.org.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by ULICO and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachmann, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Yes. Oh, yes. former President Bill Clinton was on a couple of the Talking Head shows this weekend, and he wants you to know that, especially the Tea Parties, he feels your rage. Just like back when he was president, he was feeling the pain. Now he's feeling the rage. But like I've always said, and he, you know, he's reiterated this, the blame is misplaced. He said, quote, "A lot of the voters who are voting for the Tea Party candidates have really good impulses. That is, they believe that for years and years and years, the people with wealth and power or government power have done well while ordinary people have not." And yeah, part of it were your policies, Bill. You know, you look at some of the trade policies that encourage jobs to move overseas, and you look at some of the tax havens that were set up around that, and you go, yeah, I get it, sure. But the reality is, and he hits on this, is that, as I've said, I would be angry. I am angry. I'm ticked off most of the time. But not at the same people. You know, I've asked the question 100 times, if not government, then who? If you're angry at government and you want to tear that down, you want to drag it in the bathtub and drown it, what takes its place? And nobody's been able to give me a rational answer. And I guess my problem is I'm a little too pragmatic. While, you know, as you love to point out, I have a libertarian streak. Yeah, I don't want government involved in a lot of things. But the things that I want them involved in and that they should be involved in, I want them to do right. You know, I had a conversation this past weekend with a relative, one of my wife's relatives who lives in Alaska. And he was telling me, you know, we were talking about Alaska, and he was saying what most people seem to forget is that Alaska is not a conservative state. It's not at all conservative. It's libertarian. And, you know, and I said, yeah, I understand that. He said, Sarah Palin is not so much a conservative as a libertarian. She's trying to make herself a conservative because that sells on the mainland. But in Alaska, it didn't sell. And he was talking about this guy, Ed Miller, or this Miller guy, who probably was probably going to win. I mean, there's very little doubt that he's going to win and we're going to have a crazy guy in the Senate. But the appeal is to this libertarian, leave me alone, get government out of my life mentality. And he said, you know, what we've heard since President Obama has taken office is that you're under attack. They constantly, it's a constant theme. It's in your ear all the time. The economy's collapsing. They're going to take what's yours and they're going to give it to somebody else. Government's growing so big. Government's growing too big. They're taking from your grandchildren. They're going to steal food out of the mouths of your grandchildren's grandchildren's grandchildren. And people are visibly scared. You know, you look at some of these videos with the Tea Party people, and they're like, I'm just scared to death. I'm just scared to death. Down the line, one right after another. And I say, what do you got to be scared about? You come together and you solve problems. But we're not doing that because, as Limbaugh said from the beginning, I want him to fail. They want this. They want chaos. They want collapse. They want us divided. And that's what they've gotten here. They've gotten a divided populace. People who have been listening to, you know, 24/7. It's a constant drumbeat in their ear constantly. They wake up in the morning, turn on, you know, the crazy guy in the morning. And drive to work, crazy guy, crazy, crazy, yeah, crazy. Go to work, you listen to crazy all day. Drive home, crazy, crazy, crazy. Go home, flip on fake news on Fox, more crazy. So you're filled with crazy 24/7. It's a constant bump, just boom, 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 crazy, crazy, crazy. So we got crazy people. And crazy is on the march. We need to calm down a bit. The world is not falling apart. The globe is not collapsing on us. Chicken Little is not here.
You talked about Bill Clinton, and the man still has it on a certain level, Rick. He's a master, regardless of what you think of him in his total what he did as a president in 8 years. He said this, and I thought about it, and I thought, you know, Bill Clinton, you're right on. He said, what the Democrats have to do, they have to tell the voters, look, this is what we've done so far. This is what we want to do going on from this point forward. This is what the Republicans have done. He said, if we allow the other side to say to the voters, you're angry, you're upset, now go vote, Democrats lose.
Absolutely. And, you know, it gets into a bunch of this. But look, when I'm talking about this constant drumbeat, this is not grassroots drumbeat. They love to say, oh, you know, the Tea Party is a grassroots movement. No, it's a grassroots movement, as Clinton says, bankrolled by people who want to weaken the government so that they can be even more unaccountable for private concentration of power. And he says that is what got us into this mess in the first place. And I would argue, and I think a lot of people would agree with me, that he helped that. The telecom bill of 96 actually made things worse, made consolidation of the media even worse. We know that. And now he's saying, well, you know, it's these rich people who bankrolled all this. And it is. You know, when you see the Koch brothers or Cook brothers or however you want to pronounce it, and Freedom Works and Americans for Prosperity and, you know, all of these right-wing front groups who are funded by but a handful of people out there pushing, pushing, pushing. Fear, fear. Be afraid. They're coming for you. They're around the corner. They're stealing your children's milk money. And they're telling it to mostly people who were LMVs when they're kids anyway. They're lunch money victims.
Yeah.
So now they're adults afraid to walk to work because they're afraid they're going to get mugged on the way to work like they used to on the way to school. Look, folks, the sky's not falling. This president has done what we wanted him to do. Maybe not in the way we were hoping it would get done, but it's moving in the right direction. And one of the things that I absolutely agreed with Bill Clinton with on this weekend is that he said, you know, look, I was wrong on the health care bill. I thought it would be popular. And what, like we said from the beginning, Jake, through all of this, the reason that it's not popular is because it's not taking effect. Great. It's going to be 3, 4, 5 years down the road. People need to see, and especially in this culture, where this instantaneous, instant gratification, right now culture, they needed to see that this is working for them and this is making their lives better. And this is the victory that the Republicans had. This is the victory that the conservative movement had. They were able to stall this and draw it out and we need to be deficit neutral, so we're going to kick people off now. So we got a bunch of angry people going, hey, what happened to my health care? And now you see numbers, almost 51 million people uninsured. And then the message that the Republicans can say, or look, Obama passed his health care. Is it making your life better? 51 million people without health care. Did it make anything better? And what I love about that, it takes real stones to stand up and say that. Because they're the ones who poison-pilled it and obstructed and blocked and did all of these things that made it worse and watered it down. Yet they're the ones out there saying, look, you know, did it work? See, look. Look what they did. And the Democrats don't have the messaging. They don't have the infrastructure like fake news over at Fox. They just don't. And they don't have the talk radio network. They don't have that.
And if you need any proof, Rick, in a state where we have the second oldest population, and that health care reform helped, oh, my God, hundreds of thousands of Pennsylvanians better than 50. It's up around 55%. I think the exact number is 54. 54% of Pennsylvanians do not favor the health care reform. That is, to me, is astonishing.
Well, what it tells me is it tells me that they don't see the value in it. And look, my wife goes, well, what did we get? She goes, I don't know. I said, well, no more rescission. They can't go back into your past. And I explained to her, I said, what they used to be able to do, and my insurance could have done it to her, if she were to be diagnosed with cancer, they could probably go back in her past and say, well, you know what? When you were a teenager, you took that acne drug for a little while. And we now know that acne drug causes cancer. So we're going to deny your claim. And you are going to either be able to pay it out of your pocket or you're going to die. Because we have a pay or die system. And most people love to say, well, you know, you can just go to the hospital and they have to take care of you. No. They don't have to give you sustained long-term care. If you fall out of a tree and break both your knees in the park, they're going to fix your knees. Yeah. They're going to put casts on them and wheel you out into the street and say, taxi, and have you taken away, like they did in Los Angeles. They were taking people and dropping them on Skid Row because they didn't have insurance. So a lot of this stuff we need to be able to focus on and say, this is what it did. Okay, no more pre-existing conditions. But they didn't do anything about the insurance rates that could triple. Who can afford that? We're right back to pay or die. And that doesn't change until 2014. So then you get people like Mike Huckabee who come, well, you know, pre-existing conditions sound so nice. So when my house burns down and I didn't have insurance, I can just call the insurance agent and say, hey, you know, I'd like insurance. My house burned down. Remind yourself that Huckleberry is a religious man. Think about that for a second. I mean, really, he is an evangelical, one of the loudest, one of the guys who'll stand up and promulgate the word. He'll tell the good word. And the good word is pre-existing condition, die.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, he was taken care of, which network gave him a show Fox News.
So at the end of all of this, come November, we better figure out which side of this equation we're on. This health care bill is going to get better. If we let the Republicans take power and starve the beast, starve the bill, we're going to be worse off. When we come back, I want to talk about a little bit more about this, because I think this is important. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Hello, I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are. Not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing. So is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
I'm at a complete loss for words, so I need your help. Not so long ago, Republican office holders in our country were conservatives, a political philosophy which literally encompasses the notion of conservation. Those Republicans wanted to conserve important things, like the public infrastructure, the rule of law, public education, and even our environment. During the last 30 years, though, voters in the GOP's primary systematically culled these classic conservatives from office, replacing them with right-wing laissez-faire ideologues. These new breed Republicans largely rejected our country's commitment to the common good, instead supporting privatization of government functions and tax favoritism for the corporate elite. The media, however, made no linguistic adjustment to this fundamental change in philosophy, simply shifting the conservative label to the right-wingers. But if they can be called conservative, what the hell do we call the new breed Republicans who are presently displacing those politicos who displaced the actual conservatives? This year, the Republican primary has gone from plain old right-wingism to right-wing crackpotism. In Nevada, Wisconsin, Colorado, Delaware, New York, Kentucky, and elsewhere, many GOP nominees to Congress and other offices are farther out than Pluto. In Social Security, they rant, stop punishing BP. Cut off unemployment benefits to jobless Americans. Keep the government's hands off our Medicare. And on and on. Instead of tea, I think these people's tea bags are filled with loco weed. This is Jim Hightower saying, once again, however, the media merely labels them conservatives. Surely you can think of a better, more apt term. Send your suggestions to info@jimhightower.com. The best suggestion wins a free subscription to the Hightower Lowdown. Go to info@jimhightower.com.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, I gotta tell you, I'm hoping that to be the case. Politico had an interesting article yesterday. It asked the question, how would Boehner keep house? Or, I mean, Boehner. Tan Man. The Orange Man. Agent Orange. Clockwork Orange. There he is. They write, across the Capitol House, Speaker Nancy Pelosi's imprint is everywhere. Energy-efficient light bulbs, healthful organic foods in the cafeteria, aggressive recycling, and, of course, a complete ban on smoking. But what kind of housekeeper would John Boehner be if he becomes Speaker? Democrats and environmentalists fear that the Republican leader from Ohio, an avid smoker who has mocked Pelosi's workplace overhaul of the Capitol and dismissed greening initiatives, would either undo some of the policies or merely let them peter out. Here's the thing, and this is what bothers me. I think we are in 1980 all over again. I think this is 1980 all over, and I'll tell you why. We have made some strides in the right direction. We're talking about energy efficient appliances and cars, and we're talking about conservation. We're talking about building wind farms and solar panels and doing all kinds of really high-tech things to get off the juice, to get us away from the oil. And I fear that we will make a U-turn and go in the wrong direction as we did in 1980. And it will be another 20 years before we start even thinking about some of these things that we've been talking about the last couple of years. And because it's easy, Jake. It's easy to go, well, you know what? I want to drive my SUV. I'm going to use oil. I'm going to, blah, blah, blah. It's easy. And that's what the Republicans have always been good at doing, letting us go down the worst path possible. They're not leading us down that path. They're just directing us down it. Go ahead, down that way. And I got to tell you, I'm worried that if the Republicans take over, you're going to see all of those initiatives turned around.
We talked about, and a couple times you mentioned the fact that, Democrats have the moniker of tax and spend. Yeah, when you look at the presidencies in the last 30 years from Reagan on down, you name any Republican that was fiscally responsible. Now, my point is this. I've seen this at the state level. Republicans are master at creating a mess. Especially when they have power for four sometimes. They're masters at creating a mess. And then, as you say, leading the Democrats down the primrose path to do what was right, what had to be done. And then they accused the Democrats of tax and spend. But what they did, what the Democrats many times do, is do the right thing for the nation and for the state. Because they do that, the Republicans then jump on and say, see, we told you, you put the Democrats in charge, they're going to increase your taxes. Well, taxes ought to be increased because of the absolute mess that the Republicans left us in. And they're doing it again, and you're exactly right. They don't tell them what to do, they just lead them down that path.
I have a friend of mine who he says, the reason he's a Republican is because the Republicans are good, male paternal figures. They're good, strong, men. Ah, oh, the guy, Tim Taylor guy. And that the Democrats are more maternal and motherly. And I said, that's probably really true. Because I think about my kids, I let them get away with murder. You want to eat all that sugary crap? Good. You want to stay up all night? Good. You want to do these things? Go ahead. It's usually mom who comes home with the iron fist and says, no. You got to eat your vegetables. You got to clean your room. You got to do the right thing. You got to stay on the right path. And I guess that analogy that my friend uses about Republicans being the male role model is probably pretty true. In this instance, anyway, that they're going to let us do what we want, which is the easy thing. I don't want to have to worry about light bulbs. I just want to go to the store, buy some light bulbs, screw them in, and get me some light. I don't care if there's mercury or, really. You want the easiest thing. And the Republicans are going, wow, you don't want light bulbs that look like curly Q's. You want those good old ones with the big bulbs and that waste a whole bunch of electricity. Much like I would do with my kids, It's the same, it's basically the same thing. And I look at Boehner, and or Bonehead, whichever one you want to use. And you go,
I like Tan Manry.
Well, that too. I mean, look at him. Come on. Are you going to follow a guy who takes a can of spray paint and spray paints his body?
Well, you talked about what you think he's going to be like. Now, remember, this is a guy that sought to kill Wall Street reform. He sought to kill health care reform. He sought to kill every job bill he sought to kill. He recently had a fundraiser, and who do you think was there? I think rank and file union members were there. Do you think any unions were there?
No, it was Wall Street.
Well, listen to these names, right? Goldman Sachs, Google, Citicorp, R.J. Reynolds, Miller Coors, UPS, and each one of them handed him a nice little fat check, about $37,800 each, the maximum. Now, how do you think he's going to vote?
Well,
they're going to make available.
Is that really an honest question?
No, I mean, this is the lifestyle. You talk about golf, you know, a lot of times what they'll do, they'll offer him a corporate jet. They socialize with him at luxury golf resorts. Surprise, surprise. Waterfront bashes. And now they're giving him just rivers of money. Now, nothing he does should surprise us.
Big business has decided the Republicans are going to get all of the money this time around because...
Well, they're not limited. All the chains are off.
And we can thank our friends in the Supreme Court for that.
The non-activist judges who cast the deciding vote.
But again, I'm really honestly and truthfully, I'm worried that we're heading back to 1980 again. And that the policies we're going to see moving around in the next several months after November are going to be taking us right back to those days. You know, any energy efficiency is going to be thrown out the window. And you're going to see what was a fledgling industry destroyed. It'll be nipped right in the bud. So that we can go back to the oil. Because that's who really owns the party. And until they can figure out how to make a lot of money off of wind and solar, when they can start charging us for solar, that's when we'll start getting it. It's only then will we see any substantial movement towards alternative fuels, when they can figure out how to profit from it. Because right now, you put solar panels on your roof, who do you pay? You pay the upfront cost of the panels. Sure, it's a little pricey right now. But you know what? There are rebates out there. It makes it a little bit more affordable. But I'll guarantee you, in 2012, if you see a Republican in the White House with a Republican Congress, you can kiss all that stuff goodbye. And look, I'm not all that upset. I'm not all that worried about the next 2 years, because they're not going to get enough votes to overturn a veto. So they're going to have to lead. They're going to have to bring something to the table for the next 2 years. They're going to have to say, okay, we were the party of no. The party of no ideas, the party of no vision, the party of no. Well, that only goes so long. Now you're the majority. How are you going to run the country? How are you going to lead? And I'm telling you, I think it is going to be right back to the Bush years. Tax cuts for the very wealthy, which the Democrats are already caving on. That's going to pass. They're going to continue those tax cuts. And you're going to see more deregulation. And more insane trade agreements. Because I don't know that this president is going to veto Colombian free trade agreement, Panamanian free trade agreement, South Korean free trade agreement. I think those whistle right on through. Because do you think the Democrats are going to stand up in unified opposition the way the Republicans did? I don't. Especially when you've got a sitting Democratic president. So we could have some serious, serious problems ahead.
Well, two of them, we generally have problems with all of them, but particularly Panama, because you and I both know what happened there. I mean, you're going to have just oceans of money coming in to escape taxes. But beyond that, Colombia still has not changed that government to the extent that they have done anything substantial to prevent just murder after murder after murder of labor activists and labor leaders. That's been going on now for the last 10 years. And we castigated, report after report on our show, the fact that the Bush administration was pushing this. And here we have a Democratic presidency who may sign that. And they have not, absolutely not, done enough changes in that government.
Anyway, let's take a quick break. We're right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
On June 25th, 1938, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act into law. Viewed as one of the final pieces of legislation of FDR's New Deal and the single most worker-friendly piece of legislation ever written, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 was a victory not only for labor unions, but for workers, families, and children across the country. FDR called the new law the most far-reaching, far-sighted program for the benefit of workers ever adopted in this or any other country. This visionary piece of legislation put a ceiling over hours and a floor under wages, mandating a 44-hour work week, a 25-cent minimum wage, and time and a half for overtime. The Fair Labor Standards Act was later amended to 40 hours per week and 40 cents per hour. The law also excluded children from working dangerous jobs and set standard conditions for the employment of child workers to avoid continued exploitation of children. The Fair Labor Standards Act has been changed or amended at least 43 different times. These alterations have been used both to expand worker protections, such as raising the minimum wage, prohibiting age discrimination, and requiring equal pay, and to restrict and take away protections such as the Taft-Hartley Act and the 2004 Fair Pay Amendment. Today, we take the 40-hour work week, minimum wages, overtime, and child labor protections for granted. But up until the passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, workers were at the mercy of their employers, and children were dying in industrial accidents. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well?
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike, our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right. And you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Who's gone on for the working man?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We've got an email during the break. Again, if you want to email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I answer everyone, and I like to use some of them on the air. Andy writes, Rick, please. The reason folks on the progressive side are upset about health care is because there is only one solution. Remove the insurance thieves from the equation and give us single-payer universal health care similar to the rest of the developed world. We pay 17% of the GDP The rest of the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development Group there, the rest of the OECD nations pay less than 8% of GDP. He goes on to say that his girlfriend's health insurance went up 18%. He claims she got the notice last week. And, you know, this is in his email is pretty much what angers some people. He writes, Rick, Obama never fought for us. And that's, we don't know what went on behind closed doors, but that seems to be what a lot of folks are thinking, Jake, that you never saw him out there. He never had the gloves off. It was just, here, Congress, go do your job. You make the legislation, and I'll sign whatever you guys come up with. And he wasn't out there that we thought he was going to do, or most people thought he was going to do. I never thought he was going to. But most people thought that he was going to be out there fighting and you know, scrapping, and it just didn't happen.
Well, it was his first big test, and remember, now, you know, you and I have agreed on this. He's been all his political career, in spite of what his enemies would like to, the monikers they'd like to put on him, he's a compromiser. His political career has been spent, you know, finding consensus. Well, you know what? There's a big difference between being in the Senate in Illinois, being in the Senate from Illinois in the U.S. Senate, and being president. Now you're akin to the manager. You're not one of the ball players. You're akin to a manager, and you and I know he made a huge mistake by not coming out and setting guidelines and perimeters and saying, gentlemen, this is exactly what I want. I want this, this, and this. He did not do that. First major mistake, and it was downhill from there. And let's not minimize the difficulty in his job. I mean, the money poured in from the healthcare industry, and they bought some key Democrats. And that's another reason why the progressives have a right to be angry with the Democrats. It wasn't just the president. It was some key Democrats that left the fold.
Yeah, but you've got to have leaders who can bring people around. You've got to have a leadership structure that's going to say, hey, you know, this is important to our success. This is important to the way we're going to lead. And, you know, Andy's completely correct. I would have preferred to have seen a single-payer system. It's not going to happen because big business is too entrenched. They're into too many pockets. And, you know, look.
You and I both know, and this goes back and we're rehashing this. I mean, it almost pains me to talk about it. Remember with Backus way back before the vote, he wouldn't even allow the advocates of a single-payer to speak at a preliminary hearing, a Senate subcommittee hearing. He wouldn't allow them to speak. He had them arrested. I mean, that's atrocious.
Yep. So the question is, if the Republicans take power in November, what are we going to see? Well, they've already come out and said what they're going to do. They're going to go after the health care bill, and they're going to starve it. They're going to defund it because they know they're not going to be able to repeal it. So they're just going to defund it, and it's going to be worse. Because, look, if you can have the best policy in the world. If you don't have a funding mechanism, if you don't have a way for people to use those programs, of course it's going to fail. And that's their first line of attack, is to starve the program. And, again, you know, this is one of those things, the difference between conservatives and the rest of us. They don't mind you suffering. They don't mind children going hungry. They don't. You know, when Reagan cut off all of those school lunch programs, him and his ketchup is a vegetable statement, that right there shows you where these people's mindset is.
Well, Rick, I mean, let's be honest.
And their belief is that if your stomach's empty, you're going to work a little bit harder. And if you're desperate, you're going to work a little bit harder. That's their mindset. That's right there.
You talk to enough of them. I've talked to quite a few of them. And what I've noticed, they always have ready answers. When you talk about health care, and this bothers me, and what's one of the first things out of their mouth? Well, there's nobody in this country that can't get health care that wants it. How many times have people told you that, Rick? I'm sure numerous times.
Well, that's not true.
They've told me. I know it isn't true, but that's their pat answer. And then they say, well, you know, anybody who doesn't have health care, you can go to the emergency room in the local hospital. It's available.
For emergencies, yes, but not for health care. There's a huge difference. And as I've said a number of times, if I fall and I break my leg, yeah, they've got to fix it. They've got to, you know, they got to help me out, and they're going to bill me, and they're going to hound me until the day I die and ruin my credit so that I never get a job. There's a whole bunch of negative things that go along with this. Look, they're not going to give you free health care. They're going to bill you. They're going to take all your information, and they're going to keep sending you letter after letter after letter. They're going to send you to collections. And once the collection agent's done with you and your credit's completely ruined, you're never going to get a job, so you're not going to get health care. Because I don't know if you've noticed, but most employers run background checks on people. And if you have a poor credit rating, they generally don't want to hire you because they think you're going to be a theft risk. Because obviously, if your credit report is bad, obviously you must be bad with money. You know, never mind that, you know, you had a couple of medical bills that you couldn't pay. Like the woman in San Diego who, they were going to come take her house because her child had cancer. But I'm telling you, once they take power, it's gloves off. And these people don't mind making people suffer. I mean, look what Dick Armey said the other day. He said, well, you know, that, quote, one of the corrupt government practices is stealing your money under false pretenses. He said, I'll give you a wit, Social Security. Social Security is a pay-as-you-go Ponzi scheme. Look, they want this privatized. They don't want you to have security. They don't want to be responsible for the poor and the elderly in this country. They don't care. But they're going to tell you how Christian they are and how much they love Jesus.
And how much they're pro-life.
Yeah,
I love that one. Well, let's be honest.
You know, that's almost as mythical as our witchcraft lady. Maybe, hey, you know what? Maybe the party has gone to its natural place. Now you've got the witch there. That's pretty funny. I still think that's funny. I think that's hysterical.
Let's get this straight. You're pro-life. Every pregnancy should be taken to full term because you believe that that's the way God wants it. But yet, because of our health care system, you have mothers who don't have adequate health care. Some of the children are stillborn.
God's will.
Some of those children, when they are born, don't have adequate health care. Some of them wind up dying. Just like there's a lot of Americans who have died. Children are dying, innocent children. But somehow, Rick, those people can say, well, you know, it's my responsibility once they're born. That has always just, I'll never understand that mindset.
But here's the thing, and this is where the left has gotten a bad name. Because they've allowed the right to say, well, you just want to let lazy people sit home and not have to do anything. And I'm not for that either. And I think we have to say, yeah, there is a segment of the population who doesn't want to work. They don't want to have to get up every day and do what the rest of us do every day. And for that, there's got to be a stick. You know, there's got to be a carrot. There's got to be a stick. And we've got to say, look, you know, there are no handouts. There are no free lunches. You've got to go do something. Something. It's that simple. And we've got to be firm about that. And I think Clinton tried to do that a little bit, even though I wasn't fond of the way it happened, the welfare reform bill. Could have been better. But it was that start, and the Democrats saying, no, we want people to work. Because there are therapeutic qualities to work. Anyway, let's take a quick break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back with your phone call. Stick around.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Friday saw what could eventually become a stream of positive job growth news.
General Motors said that a $483 million investment at a plant in Spring Hill, Tennessee, could see the return of 483 laid-off workers. GM will make the investment if it receives requested incentive packages from local and state governments. The U.S. Navy announced it is trying to bolster interest in a shipyard that is scheduled to be shuttered by Northrop Grumman in 2013. Northrop plans to consolidate shipbuilding in Mississippi. The Avondale shipyard has been in ship production for 75 years and employs 5,000 workers. The Navy's plan would advance a multi-billion dollar contract that would see the construction of a new class of oiler starting in 2014. The plan would likely see scrutiny by the Treasury Department, as it could allow for a foreign company to purchase the property. And Boeing plants could also soon see a hiring spree, as the company announced plans on Thursday that the company would be increasing the current production rate of 737s of 31.5 planes per month to 35 planes per month in 2012 and 38 planes per month in 2013. Boeing did not know as of Friday how many new workers that would mean in the long run. In a resurgence of hope or promise change, of unity and pursuit of political and social policies that reclaim the American dream for all Americans, One Nation is on the march. Doug Cunningham files this report.
The October 2nd march in Washington, D.C. is expected to draw huge numbers of people calling for jobs, justice, and better education. Heather Booth is executive director of Americans for Financial Reform.
The broad theme is putting America back to work and pulling America back together. 2 years ago, so much of the country was filled with hope and a sense of possibility. And so people came out for the election, embracing people across other divides. In the last period of time, as often happens in terrible economic downturns, there's been professional hate mongers, often in the most prominent places in the media, often backed by millionaires and billionaires, to divide people and make people feel that they're not part of the true America.
Organized labor, civil rights, education, and environmental groups are all uniting for this One Nation Working Together march in Washington, October 2nd.
And what One Nation Working Together is trying to do is to say that all of us are part of the true America and to call us back to the principles on which the country was founded for life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness.
To join One Nation and help build the march, go to www.onenationworkingtogether.org.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by ULICO and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds like a don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in the world, their lines crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation. Wasting time in the unemployment lines.
Well, the AP's reporting that the, House Republicans are planning to unveil a roughly 20-point election year policy agenda this Thursday at a hardware store in suburban Virginia. GOP officials said party leaders will go public with a plan focused on jobs, spending, health care, national security, and reforming Congress. They'll brief lawmakers on it late Wednesday because they don't want any leaks. The officials spoke on the conditions of anonymity because they were not authorized to discuss the plan. The plan? It comes 6 weeks before the midterm congressional elections in which Democrats are bracing for major losses. You know, they got to add that to every story. It can't be this, hey, you know, these dingbats are coming out with another contract to destroy America. It can't be just that. It's got to be, well, you know, because Democrats are bracing for huge losses and it's, you know, it's wildly possible it's going to cost them control. They got to add that to everyone. It's part of the frame. And it's frustrating because you know where they're coming from. Ah, we got to do something, folks. You got to get out and vote. You got to get out. You got to get your neighbors out. Anyway, let's take a call. We got Jim on line one. How are we doing today, Jim?
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
I'm good. What's on your mind this evening?
Just a couple things that you've been talking about tonight. Number one, with these programs that you're talking about, like Social Security, Medicare, public health, stuff like that.
You mean the huge Ponzi scheme?
Exactly. Now, I'm a retired federal employee, and I know a little bit about how government works. Believe me, I do. And when you wish to eliminate a program, you simply put it up as a, what they call a UFER, an unfunded requirement. And they destroy it by, as you said, eliminating the funding mechanism totally.
Yep.
And they don't care. And what you have in the electoral scheme for November are what I call Manchurian candidates. And what you have following them in the Tea Party movement are people who are so illiterate, so undereducated, that they are taken in by all this stuff.
Because it's simplistic. It's easy. It's easy to digest. It's you know, it fits into the sitcom model that people are used to. We're used to that 13-year-old mentality that we see on evening sitcoms, and that's where they keep their messaging. And you got to give them credit. They are brilliant with their messaging because they can boil their thoughts down.
Yeah, you know, I can barely hear you, and it's hard to have conversations with someone you can't hear, and if I turn my computer up, then we're going to have feedback. But nonetheless, what I'm trying to say is these individuals have planned this for a very, very long time. This has been in the works for, longer than I can care to think about. I mean, they wish to destroy the Department of Education, for example.
Yep.
They want to, as you said earlier, I think, Christianize or make public schools Christian academies or things of that nature in which they can further promote their doctrines. And unfortunately, that has a way of subverting the purpose of public education and undermining it.
Yeah, and they've done a very good job of that. I know we're... I told the story last week about my son playing soccer and some of the things around that have me concerned, that we're privatizing all of education, we're privatizing all of the sport programs. Everything's now for profit. Nothing's for the commons. Nothing's for community anymore. It's all how much can we suck out of it?
Well, you know, that's exactly their mission, is to completely redistribute wealth. And to destroy the labor unions, for example, I mean, they're pointing out the fact that why should you pay these union wages when you can get things done more cheaply? And you have people falling for this because, well, it's a short-term solution for their immediate problem. And it's a very unfortunate situation. And this business with the lady who was... on the Bill Maher show back in 1999, yeah. The witch lady, or whatever you want to call her.
Christine O'Donnell.
We better be damn careful with that, because they're going to take that whole thing and turn it around, and it's going to bite us right in the rear end.
I don't know. I think she's crazy enough that I don't think that's going to happen.
No, what they're going to do is this. They're going to say, look, she did something when she was young, and she has become completely converted, and she is a forgiven person. You know?
Yeah, I've already said that. That you're hearing the dog whistle politic in that, but I think that only applies to to the sideline people, to the to the fringe elements that hear that stuff.
Let me ask you something, Rick. How what percentage of the American electorate would you guess belongs to the Tea Party element?
Belongs to it?
Or if you could do a percentage, what would you think it might be?
That are actively going to Tea Party meetings?
Exactly.
I would say 5%.
I don't agree with you.
What do you think it is?
I think it's closer to 40%.
No, I don't know that it's that high.
I believe it is that high, and I think people should begin to realize that it is that high. This thing is very insidious, and it's a political and economic and social metastasis. And, you know, Michael Moore said it was 20% on the Bill Maher show. And then a Republican who is out of favor said, no, I don't think so, because I'm out of favor of these people, and I can tell you right now that it's 40% and climbing.
Well, I got to tell you, I hope it's not. I hope it's not 40%, because then that tells me 40% of the people aren't really paying attention.
Well, you've got 40% of the people who are, like I say, undereducated. They don't care about long-term solutions. I mean, humanity has a history of not paying attention to the long-term effects and only to the immediate effects. I mean, when we talk about alternative energy sources, solar, things of that nature,
right,
even at their best, this type of energy could not sustain this country at the level at which it is going now with fossil fuels.
I agree.
And so are these people willing to make that sacrifice for a long-term solution?
Of course not.
No. Humanity has a, you know, stupidity has a habit of getting its way. And that's what's happening now. And the President Obama, you know, when you try to be all things to all people, you end up being nothing to everybody.
Excellent point. Excellent point, Jim. I appreciate the call. That very insightful. I'm gonna think about the 40% number, though.
Think about it long and hard, because it's true.
I'm going to. But I appreciate it. Thanks so much for the call.
Think about it long and hard, because it's true.
What do you? 40%? You think?
Is he saying 40% of the Republican Party, 40% of all the electorate?
He's saying 40% of the electorate.
That's hard.
And I'm,
to
you know, I'm thinking.
I hope for the sake of the country he's wrong.
If that's the case, man, we're talking massive landslides in November. You know, I'm saying about five, maybe 10% are active, going to meetings, being, you know, making up their misspelled signs, all of that. I think a large number of people identify with them and say, you know, they make good points because they're just angry.
It could be 40% of the Republican vote at this time. That's possible.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
That's possible.
I wouldn't doubt that, man. I'll tell you, 40% of the nation that over misinformed.
Boy, are we in trouble if that's true.
We might as well pack up the bags and head for the hills until this blows over.
Put a huge sign in the United States: closed for business.
Wow. I'm almost completely stopped in my tracks on this because, you know, I've been thinking about it, and I'm going, you know, most people I know, and, you know, this is maybe I'm just taking it from my world. I know a handful of people who are actively involved. The majority of people that I know and the majority of the people that I associate with and that are in the community, you see, you know, they're fairly in the middle. They're like, yeah, well, you know, you're going to have loons on each extreme.
Don't you think that some of these people, and you met them, some of the people who are involved have never been involved in politics. Some of them are perhaps Republicans that maybe didn't have concrete fundamental political beliefs, and they kind of get either duped or swept up in it. I'm not sure. Even 40% of the Republican Party, that those are their base feelings, instincts. I think they might have been swept up in the movement. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't be activists, and that doesn't mean that they can't be dangerous. I guess what I'm saying, long term, it's hard for me to believe that they will sustain themselves for too long. They'll just run out of steam, hopefully.
Wow, 40%. We're going to take a break here. That just keeps pounding in my head like a migraine. 40%. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. What do you think? 40%? Wow. Please say it isn't so.
It is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
I'm at a complete loss for words, so I need your help. Not so long ago, Republican office holders in our country were conservatives, a political philosophy which literally encompasses the notion of conservation. Those Republicans wanted to conserve important things, like the public infrastructure, the rule of law, public education, and even our environment. During the last 30 years, though, voters in the GOP's primaries systematically culled these classic conservatives from office, replacing them with right-wing laissez-faire ideologues. These new-breed Republicans largely rejected our country's commitment to the common good, instead supporting privatization of government functions and tax favoritism for the corporate elite. The media, however, made no linguistic adjustment to this fundamental change in philosophy, simply shifting the conservative label to the right-wingers. But if they can be called conservative, what the hell do we call the new-breed Republicans who are presently displacing those politicos who displaced the actual conservatives? This year, the Republican primary has gone from plain old right-wingism to right-wing crackpotism. In Nevada, Wisconsin, Colorado, Delaware, New York, Kentucky, and elsewhere, many GOP nominees to Congress and other offices are farther out than Pluto. In Social Security, they rant, stop punishing BP. Cut off unemployment benefits to jobless Americans. Keep the government's hands off our Medicare. And on and on. Instead of tea, I think these people's tea bags are filled with loco weed. This is Jim Hightower saying, once again, however, the media merely labels them conservatives. Surely you can think of a better, more apt term. Send your suggestions to info@jimhightower.com. The best suggestion wins a free subscription to the Hightower Lowdown. Go to info@jimhightower.com.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. If you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
Always by your side.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, it appears that the Tea Party Nation, if you remember, they organized the big convention in Nashville not too long ago, back in February, I believe it was, paid Sarah Palin $100,000 to come and talk to about a little less than 600 people. They tried to put one on in June, another convention. That fell through because they just aren't getting people to come. They tried again for October 14th. That has been postponed again. And, you know, during the break, we were just kicking it around a little bit, 40%. And I'm my mind is about ready to explode on this 40% number. And, you know, as we were talking about in the break, I think 40% of the people identify with them on some level because they're angry, too. They're ticked off. Like, I identify with them. I can see where they're angry. I can see what has them all riled up. But I got to tell you, 40% of active people, there's just no way. In my mind. And if you look at some of these Tea Party rallies that they've had in the past, like our board op Brett said, or you know, back a year ago, they were getting 2,000 people at a rally. Now they're getting 400 or 500. There's some energized people, but they're burning out. And, you know, I don't know if I agree with Brett. He says the Tea Party movement's dead. I don't know that it's actually dead because there's too much Wall Street money propping it up. But look, you know, at the end of this, we've got to meet some of that energy with some energy of our own and fight back against what could be a real problem come November if we stay home. Look, in Delaware, the numbers were not that overwhelming. You're talking about 30,000 people voted for a U.S. Senate candidate that got to get her on the November ballot. Out of 621,000 registered voters, 30,000 people voted for her. Of 30, that is not a massive majority, Jake. Again, it goes back to my 5% theory.
Low turnout, but, you know, those who supported her got out. Most elections, if not all elections, it comes down to turnout.
And what I
who can get out their supporters?
What I like about this is I'm hoping that they overblow. I hope they go out there saying a bunch of crazy stuff. I hope they go out and they tell the truth. I hope they go out and say, you know what, we think unemployment compensation extension is unconstitutional. So that Main Street America goes, well, wait a second. You know, I got a relative who's out on unemployment. Without that unemployment, their kids would starve. I'm hoping sane people wake up and listen to some of the things that are being said. Or am I missing something here?
Well, a little bit. I think what you're underestimating is that there's a convergence here. It's not just about taxes. It's not just about economics. You have that right-wing lunatic fringe that was calling him a Muslim, that was calling him a communist, that was saying he wasn't really an American citizen. And, you know, they've kind of merged into this united movement. They have, you know, they have the same enemies, but they're not necessarily agreeing on all the issues. And
look, to me, this whole Tea Party movement is nothing but a bunch of people who are angry and ticked off that the America that they were promised as kids isn't here. It's been taken. The very wealthy have sucked the middle class dry. And we still have a pretty good-sized middle class, but it's shrinking. And it's the people at the fringes, the people who are going to fall off first, they're the angry ones. And those are generally your lower-educated middle-class people who, you know, who used to do the hard work, who used to build things. And those jobs are now gone. And instead of blaming the guy in the white shirt and the tie at the, you know, sitting in the boardroom, he's turning around poking at government saying, all right, your fault. And to a degree, you know, with our trade policies, I'm going to agree with that. And the other part of it for me is, you know, what you get, and my friends who do identify themselves as Tea Party activists are this. You know, they are racist. They are misogynists, if you will. They'd love to go back to the days where, you know, the man ruled the roost. And, you know, and those people knew their place. Which is why I think that whole thing with Christine O'Donnell sells. It's more dog whistle politics. Women should submit to their man and be, you know, submissive.
Harken back to the good old days.
Yeah, the good old days.
That weren't so good. I think also...
I think they were great. If you were a man, I think they'd be great.
It's fair to mention, you know, remember United for Prosperity? I saw those people in action. Man, that's big money. And they're saying, well, you know, you guys, all this fear and all this apprehension about the future, you know who the culprits are? It's Obama. It's the Democrats.
Americans for Prosperity.
Americans for Prosperity. What did I say?
United for Prosperity.
You know, I'm sorry. Americans for Prosperity.
Same.
Funded by.
Same euphemistic name.
Our friends, the Koch brothers.
Is it Cook?
I was always. Well, I say Koch because there was a mayor in New York, 25 years ago, Ed Koch was his name, so I it's the same, spelled the same way, so I'm saying Koch.
Couch? No?
Koch.
Okay.
Ed Koch.
gotta love
Mr. Webster.
There you go. You gotta love Montana. The AP is reporting at a time when gays have been gaining victories across the country, the Republican Party in Montana still wants to make homosexuality illegal. The party adopted an official platform in June that keeps a long-held position in support of making homosexual acts illegal, a policy adopted after the Montana Supreme Court struck down such laws in 1997. The fact that it's still the official party policy more than 12 years later, despite a title shift in public attitude since then, and the party's own pledge to support for individual freedoms, has exacerbated and upset some GOP members. Look, at the end of this, and this is one of those things that makes you just kind of makes you wonder, you know, do you believe in personal freedom? Do you believe in the Constitution? Do you believe in the right to privacy? And it's obvious that the Republicans don't. You know, they want to be left alone. They want that libertarian ideal of, you know, I want to be an individual. I want to do what I want to do, but I'm not going to let you do what you want to do, because I'm too concerned about what you do inside your house, which I just think is silly. I mean, I got too many problems in my life to worry about what somebody else is doing. My grandfather always had a saying, don't worry about me, worry about yourself. If more people followed that, we'd be a much better off society. But, you know, you got a whole bunch of people who've got to be in someone else's business. And what scares me is you've got someone like Anton Scalia, who's basically come out and said, well, he did come out and say, look, there's no protection against sexual bias. There's no right to privacy in the Constitution. And I got to tell you, I thought it was explicit right there, you know, right to, you know, to your persons and papers. But evidently, according to him, it's not. In 1965, the San Francisco Chronicle reports, the Supreme Court ruled, and you've heard me talk about this in the past, ruled in Griswold versus Connecticut that a state ban on contraceptives was unconstitutional based on it violated the right to marital privacy. That ruling set the basis for Roe versus Wade, in which the court overturned bans on abortion on the ground that they violated privacy. Well, Scalia is saying, well, you don't have that right to privacy. And I've been saying for the longest time the conservative movement so wants to go back and undo Griswold. Because, you know, to them, that's, oh, boy, you know, we can make people go back to the rhythm method and have people have hundreds of kids then. And, oh, won't it be great?
No, it won't.
But that's their mentality. And with this, you know, with people like Scalia on the court, hold me, I'm scared. Somebody, please.
Yeah, and he's only in his 60s. So, you know, he probably has a good 15, 20 years more, barring any serious disease.
Yeah, the San Francisco Appeal reports the 14th Amendment, enacted after the Civil War in 1868, guarantees due process and equal protection, and in recent years has been interpreted by the courts to prohibit sex discrimination as well as race discrimination. So he's against that as well, saying, look, you know, that's not the same thing. So any of this isn't covered by the Constitution. Now, he does say, look, you have the right to pass laws, and we've got some laws against that, but it's not grounded in constitutional law. That pretty much scares me. And then, you know, bringing it back to what you've been talking about with the Equal Pay Act, against that as well. He said, quote, don't tell me the framers of the American Constitution never had that in mind. Because it does honor, does God honor. Yeah, it's
wow.
One of those things, folks. It's scary stuff.
The scary thing about this court, you know, in some decisions they want to be strict constructionists, and in other issues, they're very activist. Look at that latest decision, allowing unlimited political contributions.
Citizens United is just a horrible decision. And I knew it was coming. I had told, you know, for 6 months before it was out, I said, this is coming, folks. Watch for it. You know, I knew when they had heard the case, and I read through what it was about, and I said, you know what, this is going to go 5-4, and we are going to have big trouble.
And as bad as what the conservatives have done the last 30 years, probably as bad as any, was the long-term damage due to the appointments on the Supreme Court. Some of the decisions that they've come down with are going to have negative connotations far into the future.
Yep. Did you know Christine O'Donnell had a lesbian sister?
No, didn't know, didn't care.
What is it about conservatives that seem to have...
Has she talked about her, by the way? I'd be interested to hear what she says about that.
Well, she says homosexuals have an identity disorder. So I wonder if she thinks that her sister is a deviant, as she's put it in the past. That's something interesting. Because, I mean, you think about it. Newt Gingrich's sister is a lesbian. Dick Cheney has a lesbian daughter. I mean, what is it about all these conservative women that they turn against? I mean, if you really think that their theory is right, what is it about?
I don't think you have a choice, Rick. Come on.
I know they don't have
a choice. Don't buy into that nonsense.
No, but I'm saying, I mean, if you're going to use their frame, what is it that made them choose away from the conservative movement?
I mean, if you follow their line of Looney Tune thinking, that's a good question.
Let's take a break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
On June 25th, 1938, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act into law. Viewed as one of the final pieces of legislation of FDR's New Deal and the single most worker-friendly piece of legislation ever written, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 was a victory not only for labor unions, but for workers, families, and children across the country. FDR called the new law the most far-reaching, far-sighted program for the benefit of workers ever adopted in this or any other country. This visionary piece of legislation put a ceiling over hours and a floor under wages, mandating a 44-hour work week, a 25-cent minimum wage, and time and a half for overtime. The Fair Labor Standards Act was later amended to 40 hours per week and 40 cents per hour. The law also excluded children from working dangerous jobs and set standard conditions for the employment of child workers to avoid continued exploitation of children. The Fair Labor Standards Act has been changed or amended at least 43 different times. These alterations have been used both to expand worker protections, such as raising the minimum wage, prohibiting age discrimination, and requiring equal pay, and to restrict and take away protections such as the Taft-Hartley Act and the 2004 Fair Pay Amendment. Today, we take the 40-hour work week, minimum wages, overtime, and child labor protections for granted. But up until the passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, workers were at the mercy of their employers, and children were dying in industrial accidents. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
Yeah, but not the kind that the insaniacs running around with tea bags on their forehead. Pulling a wagon with somebody whipping them. You got to wonder about that. What is up with that? Well, I would think only a conservative would let a self-loathing person would allow someone to stand there with a whip and beat him from behind. Did you see that video? The guy was pretending. He wasn't actually doing the work. He was pretending like he was pulling this big wagon, and the guy in the wagon was behind him with an Obama mask whipping him. And, you know, okay, haha, funny, you know. Anyway, got an email during the break. Again, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Cowgirl writes, 40% is pure whiskey insanity. I'm in North Dakota, Montana, and one out of 10 people even know that what the freaking teabaggers are. And I'm supposed to be the red state here, rolling on the floor, doing all of that other stuff that people do. She says, please. Thanks so much, cowgirl. You know, and there's a good point there. The majority of the people don't even know what T stands for. I've yet to find, well, wait a minute, I did meet one guy who did know. But he was one of the organizers of the event, so duh, you'd expect him to know. But none of the minions walking, you know, mulling around had any clue. Tell you, I thought that was the party up in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
No, it stands for taxed enough already. And I agree with that. I wholeheartedly agree with the sentiment that I am taxed enough. And like Warren Buffett says, you know, it's class warfare and my class is winning. Why? Because they're not paying any taxes. All of that has shifted down to you and I, the people who can least afford it, the people who are struggling to make ends meet, the people who get up every day, punch the clock. They're the ones who are paying the taxes, man. Oh, but, you know, the very wealthy, Jake, they pay the big money. But as a percentage of their income, it's almost the same as what we're paying. And then we get hit with sales tax. We get hit with, you know, license fees. And every time you turn around, it's something else. It's something else, taking a little bite here, a little bite there. Got to go get the car inspected. Got to get license plates. You got to get a driver's license. You know, all of this stuff. Every time you turn around, well, you need school tax, you need city and state and local tax, you need all of these little taxes that are nickel and diming us to death. Where, you know, and as a percentage of our income, it's a massive percentage compared to, you know, our millionaire friends who, you know, it's just a little percent.
Well, in this state, we don't talk about the inequity in our tax system here, Rick. I mean, first of all, our Constitution precludes a progressive income tax.
And if you don't think that the Republicans, when they take over, are not going to go back after a flat tax, you need to have your heads examined. Because it's coming.
Well, you talked about fees. I mean, look at your fees for all the state services. I'm thinking of you know, license plates and all kinds of fees. They're looking for ways to make up the shortage of tax. Yet we don't tax. We don't tax at all cigars. We don't tax at all. We're the only state that doesn't tax smokeless tobacco. We allow, what is it, over $50 million a year to go down the tubes because we don't have the political will to close that Delaware loophole. I mean, the Republicans in the Senate didn't have the foresight to go after the natural gas companies. And last year, the state lost $60 million. $60 million simply because they didn't have the guts. And then we wonder why they're nickel and diming us on the state level.
But I get it. I understand. Look, I'm right there with you. Every time I open my wallet, I want to scream. Because like you, you know, you work hard for your wages. And you don't want it to be constantly taken, taken, taken. I get that. I get the anger. But instead of saying what we need is a flat tax, so it make them poor people pay, they don't have any money. That's not where the money's at. By the way, the poor, make them pay. Well, they're not going to pay. So the answer is to look ahead of us and at least go back to a sane tax code. Let's go, at least go back to the Reagan years. Everybody seems to love Reagan. So let's go back to the Reagan tax code. And I'd even take the one from 86 where he slapped every working person in the face by taxing unemployment benefits. So all you folks who are unemployed and you look at your unemployment check, which is half to 40% of what you were earning, and then they go, oh, gee, we're going to tax you on that too? You know who to thank. You can thank Ronald Reagan for that.
Talk about taxes. Pat Toomey, running for U.S. Senate, was local, NOLA, just a couple miles down the road here from Harrisburg. And lo and behold, he made a speech, and he has come out in favor of repealing the federal estate and gift tax, otherwise known as the death tax. Recent polls, there is some encouragement. He still holds, Toomey holds a 45-36 lead, which is held steady. but there's still about 19% undecided. I still think Sestak can win that. There seems to be a little bit of movement. I see more and more of his commercials. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks, he'll start to become closer. We cannot allow an ultra-right-wing U.S. senator like Pat Toomey to represent Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I gotta tell you.
He is not representative of the cross-section of this state.
I gotta tell you, if I were a right-winger, if I were Rush Limbaugh, I would say that, you know, I'm the one who instructed Joe Sestak. I schooled Joe Sestak on how he should run his campaign. And basically, if it weren't for me, this ad would have never been made.
I'm Joe Sestak, and I authorize this message.
Pat Toomey, a trader on Wall Street who went to Congress and voted for Wall Street, then got rich as Wall Street's top lobbyist. Joe Sestak served in the Navy for 31 years. Sestak led a carrier battle group with 15,000 sailors in combat and became a three-star admiral. So for Pennsylvania, compare a lifetime of serving our country versus a lifetime of serving Wall Street.
That is a good ad. I mean, because it really shows you exactly. You got your Wall Street guy on one hand, you got your service guy on the other. Take your pick.
And let's be honest. Again, we're repeating ourselves, but I think it bears repeating. 1999, he voted to allow hedge funds to make these speculative investments, which was just devastating to millions of Americans who had to reparent. And again, he represented the interests of Wall Street quite well because he was one of them. So he spent, it's like the commercial said, but it's accurate. Joe Sestak has spent a lifetime of service to his country. Pat Toomey has spent his life serving Wall Street.
And serving well he has done. The money that they've spent on him was money well spent. Well, well spent. Because, without that Gramm-Leach-Bliley bill, without the economic modernization bill that Clinton signed, again, I'm not letting Clinton off the hook here, but at the end of it, that's, to me, what brought down our economy. The fact that we allowed speculators, again, we didn't learn evidently from the Great Depression, that if you let speculators run rampant like we did, you end
up
with...
I'm exhausted.
You end up with a huge bubble. And what's going on? What's interesting, and I'm glad that clip popped up. What's interesting is you've got now Wall Street coming out, and they've got big bucks. And they've got their mouthpieces out there saying, you're beating us up. You're beating us up. Here's the question that was asked of the president.
And I represent the Wall Street community. We have felt like a pinata. Maybe you don't feel like you're whacking us with a stick, but we certainly feel like we've been whacked with a stick. I certainly think that Main Street and Wall Street are connected. And if we're going to heal the society and make the economy better, how are we going to work towards that, healing Wall Street and Main Street? So two questions. When are we going to stop wagging at the Wall Street pinata? And how are we going to fix that arbitrage so that we can create jobs in our society?
And, that's one of the questions that keeps being asked. Well, why are you beating up on Wall Street? I'd argue he hasn't done enough. They should have just gone back and said, you know what, we're going to undo that whole Gramm-Leach-Bliley thing. We're going to just do away with that. Go back to Glass-Steagall. That actually worked. Let's just go back to that. And I think a lot of people would agree. I mean, you've got to put rules in place. You've got to make it that Wall Street knows their rules, knows their boundaries, and they're going to go right up to the limit, and then you've got to beat them back with a stick. And, yes, beat them like a pinata, back, keep them in line. In fact, I say go back and dig up some of those nuns that used to beat me as a kid and put them on Wall Street. And yes.
Yeah, but you can thank them for being the man you are today, Rick.
Yeah, someone who every time he sees a nun shrieks in fear.
And of course, the other side of that is you never once deserved it, did you?
No, I deserved it every time. They didn't have to give it to me every time.
Oh, well, at least you're man enough to admit it.
Yeah, I am, because there's not one of them standing here with a stick. Let's take a quick break. We're right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back. Money, it's a gas.
are smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Hello, I'm David Philman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing. So is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well?
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
All right, Disco Duck. We got Jake over here doing the get down. He's the get down man. Gotta. When I was a kid, back in Cleveland, they had a guy named Murray Saul, who was the get down man. In this really deep, gotta get down. I wonder whatever happened to him.
Hmm.
He was hysterical. He would go off on these rants, just off, and your blood pressure would go up just listening to him. And I guess they told him that he had to give it up or his heart would explode or something, which I understand. I understand how you can get so enraged by some of the stuff that's going on that it just consumes you, which for a short time, I think, and look, you know, I go back to that Tea Party rally I went to where I met the guys who were on unemployment out there protesting government spending. I can understand how they're angry. You know, they're struggling to get by. I get it. I absolutely do. And it comes back to manufacturing. It comes back to we need to start creating some jobs. And I don't think we need small business tax cuts. I don't think we need, any of that. I think we need demand. I think we need people to say, look, the federal government goes, we need stuff. You need to build it. And every Monday we are going to be doing a Manufacturing Monday because I'm kind of big on alliteration. And for our weekly segment, we're going to have Mickey Bolt here in a couple of minutes talking about manufacturing. But I'm looking for a manufacturing theme song to go with our Manufacturing Monday. So if you have any ideas, we would love to have them. Angela just sent me an idea for a song. It's History Repeats Itself. We're going to take a look at that. So thank you, Angela. I appreciate that. Again, Rick at therickssmithshow.com if you're interested in... You know, just a quick thought. You don't want to send me an idea for a segment, a song, something along those lines. We do appreciate the help. I don't know if you saw this. According to a recently filed campaign finance report, the campaign to defeat marijuana legalization in California is receiving substantial funding from guess who? Guess who's funding the no pot legalization bill. Come on! Alcohol! The beer people, the booze people.
Okay. That makes sense.
Of course it makes sense. You know, because you don't want people to give one drug up for the other. You know, if we legalize marijuana, you know, beer and alcohol sales may plummet. And then, you know, all that will go down, and that will be bad for them. Me, personally, I'm against legalizing pot, and not for any moralistic reasons or what you may think. I'm against it because I'm afraid of corporate America getting their hands on it. Because I think once corporate America gets their hands on pot, and they figure out how to, look, if scientists can put human brains in mice, what can they do to our pot supply? They'll make us, you know, we'll be smoking. You ever see Cheech and Chong with like the foot long doobies?
Oh, yes.
You know, they got this foot long. That's what it'll be. You'll take that. You'll need that. And corporate America will be able to cash in. So that's my rationale. That's why I'm against it. What do you got for us?
Well, Congressman Corker from Tennessee, you remember he railed against the money that we gave to GM?
Oh, let me guess.
You better sit down on this one. A hypocrite residing in Congress. This is what he said recently in a speech. At the end of the day, we all have to feel good about what we did. I contributed to strengthening the auto industry in this country.
What did he do? Hold on. Did he vote for it?
No, he was adamantly opposed. He demonized the UAW. Well, he did whatever he could to get it defeated. And, you know, surprise, surprise, now the politicians are jumping on board and any of the positives, they want credit. I guess he must think that the Tennesseans don't have a very long memory. Isn't that amazing?
And I understand they're I think it's Ford who's actually hiring people back at their plant down there.
Yes.
Some like 450 people, they're about ready to call back.
This was at a debate, and guess what? He had a lot of UAW members, and they hooted and hollered when he said that. Kind of embarrassed, and they should. I mean, you talk about hypocrisy. Wow. Unbelievable, but no. Well, I mean, is that any worse though than politicians who were opposed to the stimulus and then showed up when the check came from the federal government helping their congressional district? Is that any less shameless? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, some of these politicians got kahunas the size of California. Unbelievable.
And we let them get away with it. I mean,
absolutely,
that's the amazing
thing. Absolutely.
And we let them get away with it. I mean, that's why we do this program. You're not going to hear this anywhere else on terrestrial radio. What we do here is special because we look after the working people. Because that's what we are. You know, I can't emphasize that enough. You know, since we've been doing this program, I've gotten some really fantastic feedback from people who go, you know, I never thought of that way. And I think once we begin this conversation and we continue this conversation, and look, I beat up on the T Twizzlers an awful lot because there's some really funny stuff there. But at the end of it, we still got to be talking to each other, because if it ever gets to the day where we cannot talk to each other, Jake, where you know we just scream at each other and nobody's ever listening or having the conversation, we're in big trouble.
Well, to some degree, haven't we gotten to that point?
I think we have, but, you know, the adults in the room have to come and stand up. Because, look, you know, when Jim has a very valid concern. Hitler took power with less than a majority. And what concerns me is you look at Alaska, for instance. You could probably have a senator with 34% of the vote.
Well, you say less than half. If you read Mein Kampf or you studied the history of how the Nazis came to power, they were very, very, very much a minority. And through trickery and brutality and, quite frankly, their cunning, they gradually eliminated their enemies, took power, and ultimately Adolf Hitler was smart enough to get the allegiance of the Wehrmacht, the army. And once he got the Wehrmacht to swear allegiance not to Germany, but to Adolf Hitler, you know, it was over. You know, you don't have to be that very, very, very big. I mean, what's the famous quote? A small group of dedicated individuals who totally believe in their cause can totally make a difference in today, in any country, actually.
Totally.
Absolutely. Now, Bill Maher. And I love Bill Maher. I mean, he is so funny. I just love him. And he's a comedian, yeah, but I think he takes it to a little different level intellectually. He's up here now. A couple of the comedians have, you know, made jokes about having their own rallies, and maybe they might.
Well, they're going to, and I think, it's a great opportunity.
But I think Bill Maher takes it a little bit higher intellectually. And he was asked the question, how do you explain people who to this day say Barack Obama is not an American? He wasn't born in the United States. He's the Manchurian candidate. His ultimate aim is to destroy this country. He's a communist. He's a socialist. You know, Bill Maher said, you know, those people, they only want to listen to people who reinforce their ideas. He said, unfortunately, the very people who gave him the ideas in the first place are the ones who reinforce it. The Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, some of these ultra-right blogs. And he said, what I'm fearful of, it's going to be like that for a while. And he may be right. I hope he's not right, because if he is right, exactly what you just said, Rick, we're talking to each other, but we don't hear each other. And that's dangerous for our republic to survive, for democracy to survive. The people have to participate. And if both sides are just yelling at each other and not trying to solve the country's problems, we got some real, real severe problems in this country. So I hope that we aren't to that point. I think some people are. We'd like to think they're all on the right, and there's some on the left that probably aren't listening either, but we have to somehow come together, find a common ground, and start addressing the real severe problems that are facing this country. And God help us if we don't. I mean, Bill Maher talked about this too. You know, we always assume that we're going to be great. We always assume that the United States will always be the United States and will be that shining star. That's not a given. I think as a democracy, if you read history, we're very young. We're very young. And I think to some degree, Americans have become a little lazy. Look at the percentage of people that vote. Look at the percentage of people that really understand the freedoms that they have and the tremendous cost. And I think we've forgotten that. We've either forgotten that or we don't teach it anymore.
I go back to the Delaware race. 621,000 registered voters out of 900,000 people in the state. 621,000. And what did you have show up? Not even 100,000 people. It was 91,000. 91,000 people bothered to show up. I mean, one in six, one in seven. And what frustrates me is, look, you know, this is where that 5%, in my opinion, this is where they can make an impact. Now, hopefully when the general comes around, when the general election comes around here in November, we're going to see a different turnout. We're going to see people who the Tea Party is scaring, which is why I love these stories. I want the witchcraft woman on the front page. I want her saying stupid things like, yeah, there are, yeah, they got mice with human brains. And I want to stop sex in America. You know, you want that out there. So people who are, you know, they got their head down, they're working their butts off. They wake up and go, wait a second, that woman's crazy. In fact, all these people are crazy. We got to go vote, because we can't vote for crazy.
Well,
we've got to get the train back in the station. We're going to take a quick break.
Go ahead.
We're right back with Mickey Bolt. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Friday saw what could eventually become a stream of positive job growth news. General Motors said that a $483 million investment at a plant in Spring Hill, Tennessee, could see the return of 483 laid-off workers. GM will make the investment if it receives requested incentive packages from local and state governments. The U.S. Navy announced it is trying to bolster interest in a shipyard that is scheduled to be shuttered by Northrop Grumman in 2013. Northrop plans to consolidate shipbuilding in Mississippi. The Avondale shipyard has been in ship production for 75 years and employs 5,000 workers. The Navy's plan would advance a multi-billion dollar contract that would see the construction of a new class of oilers starting in 2014. The plan would likely see scrutiny by the Treasury Department, as it could allow for a foreign company to purchase the property. And Boeing plants could also soon see a hiring spree, as the company announced plans on Thursday that the company would be increasing the current production rate of 737s of 31.5 planes per month to 35 planes per month in 2012 and 38 planes per month in 2013. Boeing did not know as of Friday how many new workers that would mean in the long run. In a resurgence of hope or promise change, of unity and pursuit of political and social policies that reclaim the American dream for all Americans, One Nation is on the march. Doug Cunningham files this report.
The October 2nd march in Washington, D.C. is expected to draw huge numbers of people calling for jobs, justice, and better education. Heather Booth is executive director of Americans for Financial Reform.
The broad theme is putting America back to work and pulling America back together. 2 years ago, so much of the country was filled with hope and a sense of possibility. And so people came out for the election, embracing people across other divides. And in the last period of time, as often happens in terrible economic downturns, there's been professional hate mongers, often in the most prominent places in the media, often backed by millionaires and billionaires, to divide people and make people feel that they're not part of the true America.
Organized labor, civil rights, education, and environmental groups are all uniting for this One Nation Working Together march in Washington, October 2nd.
And what One Nation Working Together is trying to do is to say that all of us are part of the true America and to call us back to the principles on which the country was founded for life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness.
To join One Nation and help build the march, go to www.onenationworkingtogether.org.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by Ulico and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. If you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
Always by your side.
Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
Again, you know, as I've always said, I think that should have been right after the Ledbetter bill. That should have been the second bill passed, the Employee Free Choice Act. Give people the right to join and form unions and to fight back against the corporate greed. You know, some of the stories we've brought here in the last couple of weeks,
the Mott deal and the Express Script. Again, companies that are extremely profitable, looking for a way to just squeeze a little bit more out of their workers. We got an email during the break. Ron writes, might I suggest Watch Us Work by Devo as our Manufacturing Monday song? We will look into that. He writes, by the way, your fear of corporate marijuana is frankly baseless. It seems that you know very little about pot culture. Yeah, I'm not going to take any offense by that. I know nothing about pot. Nothing. I've never smoked it. I've seen it a couple of times. I know what it smells like at the concerts. I've never even held a joint. And the reason that I've never done any of those things is my fear, my absolute fear of being the best drug addict ever. That would be my, because that's my personality. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it very well. And that's been kind of the thing there. So there you go. I know nothing about the whole pot culture. So he goes and says, these folks are as counterculture as can be. They will not run out and give corporate America anything. I may agree with that. You know, he says, pick up or peruse a copy of High Times magazine. I may agree with that. Because I don't know a lot of people who are still smoking pot. I'm 43. I know very few people. But I would think that you would have a large segment of people who, if it was available, it was on the hey, it's right there on the impulse aisle at the local checkout. I do think you would have people taking advantage. Not that it would be, so don't get crazy. But I think more people would use corporate made marijuana there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's get to Mickey Bolt. Mickey is our good friend from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Mickey, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Rick. Thank you very much for having me.
I appreciate your time. You know, one of the things that I've been talking about for the longest time is the way we create jobs in this country is to start building stuff. We need demand. We need the federal government to say, start building me stuff, and to get companies out there actually producing local domestic products for domestic consumption.
Well, you're absolutely right, Rick. And, we look at the two countries that are pulling themselves out of this recession, this worldwide recession, and it's China, and they're doing it by cheating on our trade laws so they could come here and steal our jobs and flood our marketplace with their cheap stuff that's brought in illegally and everything else. And we also look at West Germany that has a very vibrant market, but they also have a government that kind of plans for the future and decides how they're going to stimulate the growth of their economy and how they're going to have a strong manufacturing base so they can build something and actually create wealth in their country. And it's a shame we don't do that over here.
What they have a plan? What, they don't have that invisible hand thing with that invisible guy guiding the market?
No, unfortunately they don't. They actually sit down and plan what kind of market, what kind of manufacturing sectors they want to aid and assist as they grow their marketplace and grow their market share in the world. And they do that with the workers making a decent, sustainable living. And it builds on each other and it grows the economy.
Which is something we need to be thinking about doing here. And I understand that, you know, one of the groups that has founded the Alliance for American Manufacturing is the United States Steelworkers, is the U.S. the United Steelworkers Union. And they've been out there on the forefront bringing trade cases, which I got to ask you, Mickey, what exactly is it that, why are the steelworkers doing it? Because obviously our government doesn't care. They're not doing it. The companies don't care, obviously, because they're not doing it. State and local governments aren't doing it because obviously they don't care. Why is it left to the steelworkers?
And I don't know why that is, that turns out that way, Rick, because, I mean, we are very fortunate in this country that working men and women have somebody like the United Steelworkers who will go and take these cases and apply them to, try to get our government to apply their trade laws and enforce them. There's a lot of foresight. I mean, part of the thing, part of the reason for that is the United Steelworkers are now the largest manufacturing union in the country. And they represent everything. Even though they're still called the Steelworkers, they represent actually more miners than the United Mine Workers do. They have the paper, they have plastic, they have glass, they have rubber. We actually have more members that assemble and build automobiles than the auto workers do. So we represent so many people, and that doesn't even include nurses and policemen and everybody like that, but we represent the largest manufacturing union in this country. So they have the foresight to stand up and you know, they scratch their heads and wondering why the government is not enforcing our trade laws, why they're looking the other way when it comes to China. We don't look that way when Canada, if Canada tried to pull the things that China does, but we allow China to do it.
Well, why is that? Because I'm really at a loss. You know, a couple years ago we interviewed Hillary Clinton here on the program. She said, you know, it's not China's fault. We're letting them do it. We're the ones who are the dumb ones. If we're going to let them do it, they're going to keep doing it. Why do we keep doing it?
And that's always been the strange question, why that happened. You know, part of the problem was, from what I gather back in the early 80s, is they had a trade case. And let's just take a bottle or something like that. But they tried to prove that China was dumping products over here, which means, let's say you have a glass and it costs you a dollar to make it, or let's say 95 cents. And you sell it for a dollar and make 5% profit. And let's say you had a whole warehouse full of these glasses. And all of a sudden, you needed the capital. And you've got a whole warehouse of that sitting here. Well, you could go out, let's say if you lived in Canada, and try to sell them for 95 cents or maybe 90 cents and just try to get your money out of it to get that you have sitting in the warehouse. So you do that, but the problem is, 5 months later, after you sell out the warehouse and you want to raise your price back to a dollar, nobody will buy it because I just bought that for 90 cents 2 weeks ago. Why am I going to pay a dollar now? So a lot of times they'll bring these goods over here in the country and dump it. And if they sell it for less than it cost them to produce it, that's against our trade laws. Well, they tried to prove that one time early on with China. And they said, well, the problem is, you know, when it comes to the glass, they use the sand to make the glass and the soda ash and heavy oil, and those are run by the government actually produces that, and the government of China owns the electric company and they own the, you know, the utilities, they own the bank, so they couldn't determine what the price of goods were in China. And they said, well, it's the reason why is China is a non-market economy. Market forces don't determine prices in China. So they said our trade laws don't really apply to them. Well, which back in the early 80s, it didn't matter because we didn't trade with China.
Right.
But, and once the Chinese realized that, they got American corporations on board, and they went flooding over there, and they could subsidize them, give them free electricity, free energy, free raw materials, and actually give them a lot of tax credits and everything else. So they built there. The Chinese actually tell the American manufacturers, you are not allowed to sell here in our market because you'll ruin our market. You can only produce here if it's to export.
And that's a problem with the entire globe.
Yes.
And what American corporations have done, and with the help of the World Bank and the IMF, is they've set up a system where every country in the world is, or every developing country in the world is set up on an export model to produce things and export them here to the U.S. And the U.S., we, the consumers here, are the consumers of last resort. We're the ones who buy all that stuff. The problem
right.
is we don't have any more money. We're broke.
But we still keep running out to the Walmarts or so and buying those things.
Did you see the story last week about in Toledo where they erected a glass museum to the, you know, to the prowess of glass making here in the U.S. with panels all made in China?
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been harping on it for 2 weeks now because it's mind-blowing. that you're going to go to Toledo, Ohio, the glass capital of the country.
Yes.
And the monument to that glass making capacity was built in China.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
I guess what it tells me is, you know, we're finally at the end of the road. You know, now this is it.
I still hope not. I mean, I still hope that we haven't gone over the brink yet, that we can revive the sleeping giant and start enforcing our trade laws and start getting being able to buy American goods again.
Yeah, I sure hope. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Mickey Bolt. He's from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. AmericanManufacturing.org is the website. Lots of good information there. Mickey, take me back last week. You guys took a 301, Section 301 case to the trade courts. How'd that turn out?
Well, we've got two different things. I mean, there was the Section 301 in which we're asking the administration to step in about the Chinese lead they have developed and everything else in the green technologies. I'm not sure if that's what you're
talking about,
Rick.
That's the one, yes.
Okay, very good. Now, we're asking the administration to weigh in and to take this case and to look at it. Right now, we're only asking them to do so. And it's their prerogative whether or not to do so. And we're also asking all members of Congress to sign on a letter. It's called a Dear Colleague letter, that is actually going to the President of the United States from the House of Representatives, asking the President to take a look at this 301 case, in which we honestly believe that everything right now is completely skewed toward China, their policies and everything else, and our lack of any kind of policies make it that China is going to take over, which they almost have already, the entire green technology market. And a lot of this technology that we have in the green market was actually funded and spurred on by the United States Research and Development that we did over here. And our companies have moved over there and set up shop and producing everything over there.
That just makes me sick. I mean, honestly, it just makes me sick to hear that.
And it you know, you scratch your head and say, why is this occurring? But it is.
Well, it's occurring because we have insane trade laws, and we have the greediest of the greedy allowing the greedy to continue.
And I think that's the main point. They do that. I think now we have, I mean, there's a reason why now 95% of our toys come from China. And it wasn't just one factory that started to put lead-based paint maybe accidentally or something on their toys. It was many, many of them. That wasn't a coincidence. I don't believe it was.
Well, it's like one caller called in a couple last week or so. He said, look, you know, the Pyrex dishes that you get, they're not made in the U.S. anymore. And we're seeing story after story of them exploding. When mom pulls the apple pie out of the oven, the Pyrex dish goes boom, and now mom's got, you know, second-degree burns.
Exactly. And shrapnel in her arm. And, you know, I thought it was interesting. When they were talking, when I was going down to D.C. one time to testify, they had the problem with the heparin drug. I don't know if you heard about that.
Yep.
Where the heparin drug that came from China did not work like it was supposed to lower blood pressure and that. And we really do not know how many people actually died in this country from the emergency rooms, well, in the hospitals where they had open heart surgery, and they gave them heparin to lower their blood pressure, and it didn't work.
Yeah, but we can't reimport drugs from Canada because they would be so much worse.
Well, we had a congressman that I lived in that was a free trader. Believed everything should be free trade. I mean, they should bring him in from all over the place. But he voted to pass the law to stop senior citizens from driving to Canada and buying the drugs and coming back here. That's free trade that he did not agree with.
You gotta love the hypocrisy.
Exactly.
You absolutely gotta love it. Mickey Bolt, the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org is the website if you want to get more information. Mickey, always great to talk to you. Look forward to having you again here real soon. Thanks so much.
Well, I appreciate it, Rick, and hopefully soon we'll have some more success stories to talk about.
That's what I want to hear. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. Keep up the fight. Good night.
We're going to take a quick break right here. Your call is 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7434. 2-5. Right back.
I've never been on welfare, and that's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Dick Smith.
I'm at a complete loss for words, so I need your help. Not so long ago, Republican office holders in our country were conservatives, a political philosophy which literally encompasses the notion of conservation. Those Republicans wanted to conserve important things, like the public infrastructure, the rule of law, public education, and even our environment. During the last 30 years, though, voters in the GOP's primaries systematically culled these classic conservatives from office, replacing them with right-wing laissez-faire ideologues. These new-breed Republicans largely rejected our country's commitment to the common good, instead supporting privatization of government functions and tax favoritism for the corporate elite. The media, however, made no linguistic adjustment to this fundamental change in philosophy, simply shifting the conservative label to the right-wingers. But if they can be called conservative, what the hell do we call the new-breed Republicans who are presently displacing those politicos who displaced the actual conservatives? This year, the Republican primary has gone from plain old right-wingism to right-wing crackpotism. In Nevada, Wisconsin, Colorado, Delaware, New York, Kentucky, and elsewhere, many GOP nominees to Congress and other offices are farther out than Pluto. In Social Security, they rant. Stop punishing BP. Cut off unemployment benefits to jobless Americans. Keep the government's hands off our Medicare. And on and on. Instead of tea, I think these people's tea bags are filled with loco weed. This is Jim Hightower saying, once again, however, the media merely labels them conservatives. Surely you can think of a better, more apt term. Send your suggestions to info@jimhightower.com. The best suggestion wins a free subscription to the Hightower Lowdown. Go to info@jimhightower.com.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
The Blue Blood, Sea Red. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, when I sit down and I think about this trade stuff, it angers me and it's frustrating on a number of levels. That, you know, you think about, I think about the country that my grandfather lived in, where he used to talk about, if you didn't like the guy you worked for, you walked across the street. There was a manufacturing job, there was a plant, there was always something. There were always jobs available. If you wanted to work hard and you had a skill, there were jobs. And they were production jobs. They were good paying union jobs that you could support a family on. The sad thing is that, you know, as he told me, he said, look, the people who own the businesses got tired of us being around. They got tired of us in their restaurants and in their theaters. They got tired of that. So they had to put the working class back in its place. And they've done that. You know, we do definitely, Jake, live in two Americas. There are those who are wildly wealthy, and I'm not talking someone who makes a very good living, lives in even a McMansion, if you will. I'm talking about somebody with unimaginable wealth for the average working person. The Paris Hiltons of the world. You know, explain to me what good she does for society, other than making grainy green videotapes.
She gives jobs to a lot of the paparazzi, right? Of course, I'm joking about that.
Well, I mean, that's
that is a good question. And here's the point. I mean, think about this. All the time she has and all the money, what good she could do if this society she really wanted to.
But she wants to walk around with a little dog and they,
snow, and party and
party and
And
Grainy Green.
Every now and then, maybe put some stuff up her nose and, you know.
Get caught and punch a cop in the nose. I'll tell you, it's a wow. Anyway, I don't know if you saw this, Jake. There's some guy who's walking from York to Washington, D.C.
I saw that.
Some half-wit. I guess he started on Friday. So maybe he's there by now, or maybe he got hit by a bus. I don't know. But I wonder what the point is. He says he's walking against project labor agreements, which, you know, I got to be honest. I never really thought of waking up in the morning and going, gee, I think I'm gonna walk to Washington, D.C. to, you know, to protest bank statements. Or, you know, I just don't think of it. So I got to, one, wonder what the motive is. And two, wonder who's footing the bill. I just don't think you wake up one day and go, you know, some procedure, you know, some procedure you're going to walk against. I guess I just don't see it. So basically what he's saying, and again, for people who don't know what a project labor agreement is, it's simply an agreement on large projects. If you're going to build a big freaking thing, which I've advocated for, we need to build really big freaking things. If you're going to build something really big, you have a set of rules. And you say, look, this is how we're going to build the really big freaking thing. By these rules. And everybody who participates, and it doesn't matter if you're a union member or you're a non-union member, it doesn't matter. Everybody who works on this project abides by these rules. And we're going to agree that we're going to pay our people a decent wage so we get skilled, qualified people. We're going to make sure that they're paying workman's comp so that if someone gets hurt on the job, they're covered on the job. We're going to make sure that they have health care. And we're going to make sure that we have wages and conditions that are beneficial to everybody. We're going to have safe workplaces. We're going to have decent wages, benefits, all of that stuff. And as a society, we've decided those are good things. Right, Jake?
And by the way, I think you ought to mention, if it's a project for the state or project for private, it
doesn't matter.
It provides a guarantee that it will be done on time. So it protects investors, protects the companies, and at times it protects government. It's a two-way street. Everybody wins.
Exactly. So what you've got is you've got these right-wingers out there, and probably this guy, you know, they probably paid this guy to go for a walk down the road. Go Forrest, keep going. Go, let's see him hit the other side.
Run Forrest, run.
Yeah, keep going. But you know, what makes me laugh is how ridiculous some of their arguments are. Well, I'd bid on that contract, but there's a PLA, and
wait
a second. One guy is not going to get this job anyway. These are massive projects. So you're not going to go in there and hire a bunch of yokels who barely know the business end of a hammer. You're not going to be able to get one of these bids. What's interesting to me is nobody's shown me any credible evidence that it stopped anyone from bidding. There is no credible evidence. Everybody has an equal shot at it. But what the government is saying, you know, what these PLAs say is, look, this is the wage structure. So, if you know what the wage structure is, you can make an accurate bid. Because what happens, Jake, all too often, you get these fly-by-night transient contractors who come in and say, well, I can do it cheaper than that. Well, how are you going to do that? Well, I'm going to cut my employees' wages in half. Oh, okay. So you get these guys who aren't as skilled and aren't as good at what they're doing as, you know, people who would be making that kind of wage, and they end up running over, and they end up not doing as quickly, and then it doesn't get done. What a project labor agreement does is it guarantees, look, these are the rules, this is how long it's going to take, this is the cost, and you're going to do it, and it's going to be right, and it's going to be done. There'll be no strikes, no lockouts, no workplace distractions at all. You just get the job done. You've made an agreement, you go from there. And what you hear on the right all too often is, it's un-Christian.
Well, the truth is, you know, these building construction trades have the numbers too. they can guarantee you skilled workforce in the adequate numbers. There's enough flexibility in the agreements where the unions will work with them. They'll get the work done, and they'll get it with quality work, and they'll do it on time. But, and the truth is, they have the numbers.
But it's not a union thing. Just because the union
I understand that, Rick.
Just because the union contractors have the infrastructure and have the training apparatus doesn't mean that it's a union thing. That's what the right wingers love to say. Well, it's just for the unions. It's for everybody.
But my point is that a lot of times these non-union people either aren't big enough or they don't have enough qualified people. That's my point. Each union member in a building construction trade in this state is trained. Most of them have a 5-year program, and you not only have an on the job, you have to go to school outside of the workplace. And after 5 years, and they become journeymen, they are absolutely skilled.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up because somebody asked me if I had seen it, and yeah, I saw the story. And to be honest, I don't know what makes you wake up in the morning and go, I'm gonna walk against paperless bills.
Well, there, I thought he was talking about, maybe the war in Afghanistan or health care. Oh, gee, let's worry about project labor agreements. I mean, cut me. When was that a problem?
In fact, let's talk about the war in Afghanistan when we come back.
Yes.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back. I got a picture in my pocket of a lucky one, and I announced the winner. Radio with my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat, it is my business hat. I'm up to 1 a.m. I must tell you that I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, teaching America for the better.
On June 25th, 1938, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act into law. Viewed as one of the final pieces of legislation of FDR's New Deal and the single most worker-friendly piece of legislation ever written, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 was a victory not only for labor unions, but for workers, families, and children across the country. FDR called the new law the most far-reaching, far-sighted program for the benefit of workers ever adopted in this or any other country. This visionary piece of legislation put ceiling over hours and a floor under wages, mandating a 44-hour work week, a 25-cent minimum wage, and time and a half for overtime. The Fair Labor Standards Act was later amended to 40 hours per week and 40 cents per hour. The law also excluded children from working dangerous jobs and set standard conditions for the employment of child workers to avoid continued exploitation of children. The Fair Labor Standards Act has been changed or amended at least 43 different times. These alterations have been used both to expand worker protections, such as raising the minimum wage, prohibiting age discrimination, and requiring equal pay, and to restrict and take away protections such as the Taft-Hartley Act and the 2004 Fair Pay Amendment. Today, we take the 40-hour work week, minimum wages, overtime, and child labor protections for granted. But up until the passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, workers were at the mercy of their employers, and children were dying in industrial accidents. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Now,
a new Gallup poll, the new Gallup generic ballot for Congress for the week September 13th through the 19th shows a 46% Democratic, 45% Republican split in registered voters' preferences for the midterm congressional elections. Again, you know, what we've been saying here for the longest time is this is a media construct. The polls do not bear out this massive advantage for the Republicans. Is there some discontent in the country? Absolutely. We didn't get the change that we wanted. That doesn't mean that we're ready to throw everybody into the curb and repeal all the health care and go back to the Bush policies. It doesn't mean that. The Gallup people go on to say, it is the second week out of the last three in which the two parties have been virtually tied. So going into campaign season, there are a lot of undecided people. And it's going to take the president getting out and saying, hey, you know what? This is what we did. This is why we did it. And campaign Obama needs to ratchet it up a bit. One of the questions that was asked of the president here, yesterday, listen to this.
I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted of defending you, defending your administration, right, defending the mantle of change that I voted for, right, and deeply disappointed with where we are right now. I've been told that I voted for a man who said he was going to change things in a meaningful way for the middle class. I'm one of those people, and I'm waiting, sir. I'm waiting.
And you know, look, this stuff didn't take overnight to happen. This took 30 years to get into this mess. It's not going to be fixed overnight. We can't drive through to local McDonald's and have it in a nice little bag where everything's wrapped up for us with a bow around it. This is going to take some work. And the more we understand that, I think the better off we're going to be. But look, the polls are not, they are not showing a landslide for the Republicans like the Republicans want you to do. The great thing about the Republican Party is they can project like nobody's business. For instance, you know, you had Michael Steele go out there and say, well, you know, we never really wanted to go into Afghanistan. That's Obama's war. And you had some people in this country go, yeah, it's Obama's war.
Must we say it for the 100th time?
Yes.
Bush had earmarked about 250,000 troops, and all of a sudden made a U-turn. Instead of putting 250,000 troops in Afghanistan, we wound up putting 40,000 in Afghanistan, and the rest went into Iraq. Consequently, we have this mess now. I mean, I know you don't approve of the war, but I think any man using logic can come to the conclusion that if we would initially send 250,000 troops, you're talking prior to 2003 when we invaded Iraq, instead of 40,000, the situation would more than likely be a lot better than it is, and we might have been able to cut the serpent's head off and went into the mountains right there between Afghanistan and Pakistan and clean out Al-Qaeda. Now we have this mess. And just recently, over the weekend, it was reported a young man from the area where you used to live, the city of Bethlehem, which is pretty close to where you used to live, 23 years old. He was a rear gunner in his platoon. They were coming back from a patrol. They were ambushed. And unfortunately, he was killed. This young man had served a tour of duty in Iraq, was sent to Afghanistan. He had just spent about 3 weeks at home last month, and he was planning to go into law enforcement. My point is this. We're sending our youngest and bravest, and in some instances the very best we have. And I think because of the sacrifice of so many Americans, I think from time to time we have to step back and say as a nation, is this the direction we want to go? And I think when it comes to Afghanistan, Rick, I think more and more we're maybe thinking, well, maybe we need to change the way we're fighting the war. Maybe we need to change the approach. And I understand, I know that the president has set a timetable, but for some people, we can't get out soon enough.
I'm one of them. I
we couldn't get out of there quick enough. And you know, most people thought Obama was going to take us out of there. And I said, no, he never said that. You know, well, you know, he lied in his campaign. No, he was very honest in his campaign. He said we were going to get out of Iraq and we were going back to Afghanistan. He was very clear about that, and that's what he has done. So, you know, you voted for him, you knew what he was going to do, and he did it. So you can't be upset about it, and I can't be upset about it. I just wish that we would look at what's going on and say, you know what, this turning big rocks in the little ones isn't working.
Well, there's actually some in ex-military officers, to be fair, who are saying, look, militarily, we can't win. Now, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't help them. We need a different approach. We need to build up that country economically, for one thing. I'm not so sure we have the will to do that in the amounts of money that we're going to have to allocate. I mean, let's be honest, we're in trouble ourselves. Long term, I'm a little hesitant to give credence to the Karzai regime because they don't seem to be very effective. And that's a shame. You have Americans dying.
Well, again,
and is it worth it?
Again, as I've said from the beginning, look, and I've been very consistent on this. As a nation, we've got to decide, are we in this or are we out of it? If we're in it, then we, as a nation, we have to sacrifice, we have to mobilize, and we have to defeat this. Or you get out. You cannot continue to trickle and to do the things that we did during Vietnam. Look, you know, sorry, I'm just not there.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is, and some of these ex-military people who have a lot of credibility, they're saying, look, if you want to win these people over, you got to improve their life. You can't just go in there and kill, kill, kill. You have to improve their life, and that's difficult, and that requires patience, and that requires an awful lot of money, which I'm afraid at this point in time we don't have.
Yeah, well, let's talk to Jim. Let's see what Jim's got to say. How are we doing tonight, Jim?
Oh, Rick, I'm just still listening to you and enjoying your show tremendously.
I appreciate it.
You know, Afghanistan is really at the center of the heartland of the world, and it has become the interest of many nations, the British, the Russians, even as far back as Alexander the Great. But as far as our own intervention in Afghanistan is concerned, we lost that war before we ever deployed.
Yep.
When the Soviet Union was defeated, largely with our help, with Stinger missiles and things of that nature, we left them alone after that. And instead of pursuing our help with the Stinger missiles, which took down the Soviet Hind helicopters, which caused them to lose the hegemony of the airspace over that country, we just left them alone. We should have gone in there and tried to rebuild schools, repair infrastructure, and things of that nature. However, the business of the military is not to build nations.
Nope, it's to blow stuff up.
Exactly. And, you know, that country has been known as the graveyard of empires. And when we, of course, went into Iraq, that was not a good thing to do. We transitioned a secular nation into a fundamentalist Islamic one, one that we are having to deal with. We created a Frankenstein monster over there. You'll notice today in Iraq there were some very serious problems within the Green Zone. And in Afghanistan, in Kabul, and other isolated pockets, you have a relative degree of safety. But outside that area, the Taliban has grown. Opium production has increased. And our intervention has basically, I'm afraid, been sort of like that of the French in Mexico in 1863 when they tried to prop up Maximilian on the throne. The minute the French withdrew their troops, guess what happened? Maximilian fell and was executed.
Well, they don't call Karzai the mayor of Kabul for nothing because that's basically all he is in control of.
Well, that's all he has. And, you know, you have such a fluid border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. The Taliban basically moves with impunity, and there's nothing we can do about it.
So let me ask you, then, what is the solution? I mean, I'm saying you just... that we're not going to win. We're wasting resources. We're wasting manpower. Just get out. What
you
do
don't
you
put
see?
Good money after bad.
Exactly. That's my position. My position is twofold. One, either we're all in, we double down, we put everything into, we mobilize the nation for war, like we did in World War II. Or we get out.
Yeah, but World War II was not an insurgency type of war.
I understand. What I'm saying
is the borders of that war are not the same.
I understand.
I mean, the minute our troops leave, and I work for DOD, okay?
Okay.
And I'm not unfamiliar with the military situation and how they think. But unfortunately, the minute our soldiers leave, the Taliban comes back into it. It is a nation controlled by these feudal warlords, and they're the ones who have control. They're the ones who eventually reestablish their hegemony in the absence of the American fighting soldier. And we simply cannot afford to maintain a war that's, 10,000, 14,000 miles away? I mean, every boot, every bit of food, every bullet has to be imported. And for what? We have a country that is basically very feudal and has always been impervious to foreign intervention. You know, what has become, or what was, the Soviet Vietnam is becoming our Vietnam. And I hate to say this, and God knows I do, because I have friends who died over there. And I have friends who are coming back from that place with TBI and all types of things. I'm very much akin to the consequences of what it has taken upon the American fighting man and the loss of confidence. And this is a very bad thing. And if I may add as a corollary to this conversation, this feeling of malaise is being transmitted to the American electorate. And as I said to you in my email, I'm afraid Washington has become the Forbidden City, a play with no audience, just like that of the Manchu Emperor in 1902. This creates a sense of apathy among the electorate, and that's when arcane forces and of the minority can do very serious harm. And this is basically a bloodletting operation upon which we are performing on our own body politic.
I agree. I do agree. And this is what frightens me is, as you pointed out, that people aren't paying attention.
Think of the money we have spent. How many $1 trillion have we spent in Iraq and Afghanistan?
They estimate $3 trillion we've committed.
Can you imagine how far that would go towards social programs in this country? And, of course, infrastructure that we discussed earlier? I mean, you know, we can't afford these wars. I mean, as far as war is concerned, and I have been involved in a couple, they were so important at the time. And when they were over, so many people, and I'm weeping here.
I know.
Don't even know what they were about or why we were there.
And I'm afraid that
we're not fighting Hitler anymore.
No. No, you're right, Jim.
Thank you for your time, buddy.
I appreciate the call. Thanks so much. Again, you know, this, I remember as a kid, you know, I saw the men come back from Vietnam, and I remember the green coats, and I remember the drug and alcohol problems, and I remember the broken bodies and the broken minds. And as I...
Year after year after year after year, and they don't really even get it.
Well, that's why we have to educate them, Angela.
It's like with that book called What's the Matter with Kansas? And they're talking about these people in Kansas that are, like, going towards the opposite of what their class really needs.
But his argument was also
brainwashed.
But his argument was that they were actually acting in their ideological interest, not their economic.
Okay.
You know, they were socially conservative. So abortion was the issue. Gay marriage was the issue. God policy was the issue.
They're all for these unborn babies, but when they're born, they don't give a shit about them. That's the crazy thing. It's kind of hypocritical.
Angela, I got to move along.
Did I say a bad word?
Yeah, kind of. Thanks so much. I appreciate the call.
But you know what I'm talking about.
I do. And we look forward to having you back again.
Okay. I'm sorry that I said that bad word.
It's okay.
I need to.
We got to wrap things up. But I do appreciate it.
Thanks. I'll talk to you later, Rick.
Thank you so much.
Listen to my stuff. I emailed you.
I most certainly will. Thank you.
Because it is worth, if you haven't heard it yet, it's worth a listen.
I will do. Thank you so much.
Okay.
I greatly appreciate it. Again, you know, can't be using those words. Although, you know, here's the thing. I feel like using them all the time. Because, you know, sometimes I understand anger. I understand getting frustrated. And look, you know, I've got some friends who, you know, you want to grab them and shake them by the ears and go, you know, is there anything in there? I just want to hear something rattle to prove there was something there. Because it has been an investment in messaging. And I've got friends who write down, like I said earlier in the program, they wake up in the morning, first thing, they flip on, you know, crazy guy in the morning. And then it's, you know, it's the crybaby at 9. And then it's, you know, it's lint ball at noon. And then it's, you know, another crazy guy at 3. And then it's drive home to craziness. And then it's, oh, hey, you got to flip on fake news on Fox. And it's a whole... Man, the narrow scope in which they get their information from is scary. I don't look at all liberal, labor, anything perspective. I try and look at them all. I try to read the Wall Street Journal, even though I hate the fact that Rupert Murdoch owns it. I've now kind of switched over to the Financial Times. You know, I've got to read the crazy right-wing groups. They all send me their emails. You know, Americans for Destruction of Government, Americans for Limited, you know, Mindset, you know, Limited Intellect, you know, I get all those. Because you got to know, you got to broaden your scope, and that's why we're here. That's why we do this program, Jed.
That's why I like to listen to, you don't like to, but I do. I listen to the conservative talk show hosts locally, listen to what they're saying, and occasionally, Rick, we do agree.
And that's why I keep you around. You listen so I don't have to.
That's okay with me. It's part of education. I mean, you can't close your mind totally.
I'm not at all. Again, thanks for being here. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any part of this, thericksmithshow.com. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous rain. Don't